This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, South Africa. Dumelang, hello, Absheni, Khuyamora, and all those other underrepresented languages. It's me, Dumi Marake, once again, sipping tea with you. And today, I have guests, I have real guests. Like, I didn't go and wake up a friend or abuse a husband or come and sit by myself. I brought actual real people guests. The first one is Mr. José Domingos. I could be completely mispronouncing his name. He is the amazing, inimitable, highly underrated, mildly overrated, simply amazing, very humble, very nice. I've tried to toughen him up. He refuses to be tough. He says I'm making him a puss. I'm working with him on this project I'm doing. Some of you may have seen on social media that I've got a show called Tease that I'm doing with Vanessa Frost. And this uncle has co-written and is directing and is in some respects designing this show. Hello, Mr. José Domingos, after that long introduction.
Hello, Mr. Timoraki.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very
good,
much.
Good, good. Are you sipping there?
I'm sipping this very wonderful coffee that you guys have.
Lovely.
This machine is made for me.
Yeah. You see, he says he's sipping coffee. I don't lick up everyone who comes in. Some people need it. Some people don't. Ladies, calm down. Yes, sexy voice. No, he's not available. And we have Vanessa Frost, who is my partner in crime. I've been told we look alike. It's deep. It's like she's the white version of me. Now, this is in looks. I don't know in personality. Let's pray not in personality, because all the world can handle this one, Dumi Marake. Or maybe only one Vanessa Frost. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. Anyway, this is Vanessa Frost. She is also inimitable, famous, highly underrated, highly overrated, highly, very rated, highly rated by me. She is the original cave woman. Some of you may have seen defending the cave woman. She was defending this cave woman for a good, how long, Vanessa? 15 years?
10 years. And 10 then years. I stopped because I nearly went mad.
Yeah, she got tired of defending you. Women, this is how hard it is to defend you. After 10 years, she was like, but I can't defend you anymore. That is how challenging you are. Welcome, Vanessa Frost.
Thank you, Tumi.
Vanessa Frost is also my co-star. She's also co-written this play. To be honest, guys, have they credited me as a writer, to be nice? I think my contribution to the script was show workshop here and there, and then tweaking, really. I'm a little uncomfortable, guys, with taking credit for writing this thing, because...
Well, you were a very busy person.
Yeah, but
so
the world needs you.
Yeah, so I feel like it should be like written by José Domingos and Vanessa Frost.
But those
with contributions,
very important contributions. Those tweaks that you've done are like worth their weight in gold. They're probably far more important than the whole script.
Aww,
yeah,
and very funny.
Very funny.
Very, very funny.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks. Sure. Like, you guys, it's like, you're not, but you're also special. So, José, tell me, how did this happen? Because what happened is for Tease to come about, guys. Ladies, Tease is in a hair salon. And what happens in this hair salon is at the back, we sell sex toys. Mm-hmm. Because isn't it money must be made and the rent ain't worth spit.
Exactly.
And when Vanessa and I came up with this, we were not sober. That's all I'm going to say. Some of the best things in the world are born out of liquor. Hashtag sipping tea, for an example. So, we agree we're going to do this thing. I'm just curious, José, how did she sell it to you? What made you go, I am willing to dedicate my time to two mental women, and I'm going to do this thing with them. Plus, you'd barely worked with me. I think you guys have worked together quite a bit.
We've worked together as performers. I haven't actually worked as a writer or director. I've directed you.
Yes, you have in a corporate.
In a corporate.
And you made
theater.
Me work in roller skates.
In roller skates, which it's like a duck to water. You should be in roller skates all the time.
But José tried to get me to do a Mexican accent. To this day, I don't know how to do a Mexican accent. He tried everything under the sun, and then eventually, I'm like, okay, just characterize. Yes. So how did she sell this to you?
It wasn't a hard sell. First of all, on a personal level, it's been a while since I've been to Grahamstown. I think almost 15 years.
And what?
Yeah, yeah. So around this time, when Grahamstown Festival always comes up, I always have this kind of nostalgic feelings towards it because there's, you know, as a student and various different productions, you know, it's quite an informative part of one's development as an actor, or writer, director, and stuff like that. So I've always kind of like went, I'd really like to do it. And then Vanessa said, well, she's going this year. She's going to do a production regardless. And would I be interested in being involved? And particularly as a writer, would
I do
or director,
feel I need to interject at this point that we also weren't sober at all.
Yeah. There was a lot of tea going on. So this is probably why I found myself in this situation. But the interesting part of, I think, the story is kind of what weirdly, in terms of the content of the play, when she pitched the idea to me about the salon and this place has got a sex shop at the back, is I had met somebody who's got this, and they know somebody who's actually got this. It's based on a true story. Mm. And I'd been wanting to develop a story around this as well. And she kind of pitched the idea of this idea. And I was like, that's crazy. And we happened to know the person. We happened to know the salon. Mm. And so it was, I don't know, fate played its hand, I suppose, in a way, and kind of like brought us together, perhaps. Maybe.
So I need to go and do my hair at this place,
fate
actually.
Fate and alcohol.
I need to go and do my hair at this place. I actually realize I have not test driven this place, just for research purposes.
Nor have I.
Really? No, we need to test drive. So you're going back to Grahamstown because of all this nostalgia, but also because you miss the drinking. Because Grahamstown, for some reason, I don't know if you find this, Vanessa, when you go to Grahamstown, your liver becomes way more accommodating when it comes to alcohol. Like, it's interesting.
I've been going to Grahamstown. I missed 4 years somewhere in the middle of probably the last 23 years. Mm. And I'm Grahamstown fit. Proper. So you know, I don't know. You guys got to bring your A game. You're rolling with the big dogs.
So this show, we've got Gynegard on board because, I mean, Gynegard is, talk to me about Gynegard. Gynegard is about women's cooches, right? And it's about comfort, right? Because our sexuality isn't just having babies. And how do we not get HIV? Our sexuality is how do we enjoy stuff.
Exactly. So Gynegard is a feminine hygiene product.
Yeah.
And I think the main angle that Gynegard takes is that of female sexual health.
Yes.
Not only sexual health, but general health.
Yeah.
And I mean, the products that we've got here are Gynegard Ultimate Intimate Wash, the Gynegard Intimate Care. This is a lubricant. Which is also for all day comfort. So not only for sex, but if you are uncomfortable, you can give yourself some intimate comfort gel.
See, that's the thing. Because here's, you know what? You will think Tumi Marakan knows things and she's a clever girl. But I actually only discovered this stuff last year. At the age, ripe old age, guys, ripe old age of 34. How old was I last year? Yes, I was 34. I discovered that there are these things for me. To make me more comfortable, like, you know, when my husband wants to get freaky and I'm like, yeah, but baby, I haven't showered. Don't touch me. I want to run into the shower to discover that. No, but there's these wipes. It's a shortcut. You just go freshen up, coochie, you're in. I was like, no, we must find a place with a bath or a shower. Otherwise, you're not getting in.
Exactly.
You know,
and the campaign at the moment, which I think is so fantastic because it also brings a female sexuality out into the open without it being kind of like poo-pooed or taboo, which is also, I think, what Tees is doing, is their campaign at the moment is want to get lucky tonight. So you can go to work. Wait, no, let's take it a bit further. You can wake up, go to gym, go to work. Be a school teacher, chasing after kids, the whole thing. Go have drinks with your other friends after work. Mm. Meet a hot guy if you're single or hook up with your partner, whatever the vibe. And you're ready to go.
Mm.
You are prepared.
Mm.
You don't have to worry about the effects of the day on your lady parts.
Because lady parts, no, the coochie's a naughty thing. Let me tell you, you don't know.
I don't know this.
This thing, I remember
I don't
my
know
mom.
That I want to know.
No, my mom. You don't know. What do you mean you don't know? You don't know if you want to know. You are good, my friend. Your sexuality lasts a lifetime.
Yes.
The more you know, the better. Because a lifetime is a long time, depending on your lifestyle. But for me, I remember how my mom used to say to me, hey, do me. kuku estoudu. Kuku estoudu, which means your kuch is naughty. That thing must be kept clean and you mustn't rough it. You mustn't be rough with it. Don't be just putting soap in there. You will hurt yourself, you know? And so that's when I discovered the Ghana Guard gel as well, because I'm one of those chicks. I'm so freaking unfortunate, guys. I love bubble baths, but I end up with thrush. So it annoys me because I'm like, And so when I discover that there are these nice things that I can just use to wash my couch and my couch doesn't have to burn, it's very nice, man.
Does bubble bath result in thrush?
And urinary tract infections.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that if you think about it, it's such a sensitive area and you put too much fragrance, too many chemicals, you know, and that's why the pH of Ghana Guard is also what's so important and so effective, and that's why, you know, it's a revolutionary.
Yeah, no, yeah, we've plugged Ghana Guard now.
pH 4.5.
How's that for a pun? We've plugged.
we plugged Ghana Guard.
Ghana Guard.
Thanks, Ghana Guard.
How did you get them to be part of this?
So the production company behind Teas is Bloom and Stone, and which is my company, and my partner Terry Ella has proven herself to be a production person extraordinaire. She has put together a proposal, and she and Mama Bua from Ghana Guard have got together, decided that there was a great fit for Ghana Guard and Teas, especially in the lines of female sexual health. And what we do with Teas is we talk about female sexual health, but in a comedic way, which is always fun, and in a serious way. It's got gravitas, but it's comedic. And there obviously was a great fit. It actually wasn't that big an effort. We just see the alignment of these two brands.
So what happens if someone goes, oh gosh, is there another monologue from the vagina? What's our response? So
we're calling this the vagina dialogue.
Yes.
Because it's the two of you guys.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tumi? Do you think it's anything like the vagina monologues? I don't think it's anything like the vagina monologues.
No, at all. In fact, I feel like in this sense, in this case, that the vagina is just a silent partner. It just happens to be there because our play isn't... Because people go, Teams, see, like a stand-up comedian, so it's going to be like gags after gags after gags. I'm like, no, it's a story with heart, but we get to laugh. A comedy, as my wonderful director, do you know, Jose, to this day, that line... Jose said to me, comedy is tragedy told in gags.
Amen, sister.
Man, you're deep, you,
true
Jose.
True story. I can't.
Yeah, but the fact that you knew where to place it.
Credit for that.
Yeah, but you didn't just throw it. Remember, we've been together for weeks. You never said this line. Then at the very right moment, at that moment, you just hit the G-spot of the medicine. And you... So what have you learned about dildos? Because I mean, Vanessa, for you and me, it's boring. It's like girls and dildos. Meh.
Done.
What's changed for you, Jose? What has changed your perspective in Teas and all the toys that we use?
Well, it's what's interesting about the toys, not specifically. I mean, you know, we're using toys that Lola Montez is kind of helping us out with. They've sponsored some toys, and there's the huge array of toys. The amount of stuff that is available that you can do. I wasn't aware that there's such a huge market. What's interesting about toys is as part of our research, we was watching a film called Hysteria, which was set in Victorian era, and just at around that time, electricity was coming into being, and otherwise they were using gas run stuff, and the vibrator,
gas vibrators,
yeah. So the vibrator was one of the first household instruments before the Hoover or the vacuum or any of those things. I think it was like the fifth most produced and used. Wow. So it's been around for a while, and what's interesting about it is that there's this kind of taboo that's developed over 100 or so years, where it actually wasn't as much of a taboo potentially before. And so I suppose that's what we're exploring in the play, is these ideas of you know, women's, you know, the vagina, the myths around it, and it's a, you know, using these toys to be able to discuss.
You don't think this this thing of toys becoming taboo is like the Industrial Revolution. Because, you know, when it happened, there were people who were threatened by it. There was a fear of what the change meant. I mean, the kind of movies we saw come out because of that.
I think it also has to do with the biggest topic that we discuss is the fear of female sexual power.
Yeah.
And up until 100 years ago, also, it was understood that the clitoris was the primary source of female sexual pleasure. The clitoris being the only body part on either men or women that is exclusively there for pleasure. It has no other function but to give women pleasure. So it was understood that clitoral stimulation is, you know, what women needed in order to, well, not exclusively, yeah, but needed. And strangely enough, there seems to have been some sort of movement to the power and the thrust of the penis.
Yeah.
And that is where women should ought
that
to
be getting
pleasure.
So then the vibrators are a threat because the guys are going, yeah, it's bad enough. You've bent your bras. You are independent. Now you want to replace me with this thing. This thing is a replacement. Now you don't need me because you don't need me to bring home the bacon because you're earning your own bacon. And now you don't even need me to stuff you because you're stuffing yourself. Mm.
But I think also what's important, and I think this is, you know, my own opinion and certainly something that we try and discuss in the play, is that a dildo, a vibrator, clitoral stimulator, whatever, is no replacement for sex. Mm. It is a masturbation aid. Mm. And I believe that it can enhance your sexual experience with your partner. Mm. But it certainly isn't a replacement for your partner. Mm. I mean, you can't look lovingly into your dildo's eyes and say, I love you.
But there are dildos with eyes. There's all sorts of dildos.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. On that note of touching yourself, I am going to play us a little song that talks about touching yourself. We're back. I've met mean bitches, but I'm talking these women who are just, they are highly strung. They are unhappy with the world. They look like sugar does not exist in their lives. Nothing sweet exists in their lives.
Cake.
And I'm convinced it's because they're not shagging themselves or by anybody else. Do you think I'm being ridiculous?
You know, you're allowed your opinion.
Need to get laid,
exactly,
woman.
I must say, I do. I definitely, I don't know, Joes, if you can spot these women, but there are women who I look at, and in my, you know, I look at them as the ones who are overly gymmed, overly starved, overly plasticked, and they're not putting out. I mean, and they are putting out. I think their orgasms are as fake as their boobs. If everything else is so plastic, what makes me think that your orgasm is going to be real? So yes, I'm a judgy bitch when I say that, but that is
no. But even with the overweight ones, where it's like, because I remember there was a point where I was so overweight that my libido was like at -6, and it's rough because also then it becomes an excuse not to have sex. It's like, oh, but I'm tired and I'm not well and I've got my asthma and my back hurts and.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, a female, the libido is such a tenuous thing. It depends on what time of the month it is, what we ate that day. If you had a piece of cake, a tea, it's like, I hate myself.
You're not feeling sexy.
Not feeling sexy. Whereas if you went to gym and you had a great conversation and you worked hard and you get home and you've got like that libidinal energy is all there and you're in touch with it and your relationship is. I mean, I've also just read something this morning about transcendental meditation. Okay, maybe I'm going there. Maybe I shouldn't. I'm not sure. But I want to go there. And it's intriguing.
Yeah.
When do we take 40 minutes out of our day for ourselves?
Just to be quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to do that. I used to do like 5 minutes. I'd sit in my yard because I've got a pretty big yard. And I'd sit there under the trees because I swear the minute you quiet yourselves, it's amazing the sounds you don't even realize exist around you. Like you'll hear birds, you'll hear rustling, you will hear insects you didn't even know you could actually hear, because you just think, you don't really hear insects, you see them. But then you start to hear these sounds. You even get to hear distant cars. You're like, oh my gosh, I can actually hear what sounds like three streets away.
But if we don't stop for 5 minutes to hear the other sounds, how many of us stop and make the effort for our own pleasure? I think it's quite scary. Mm. It's quite scary how few women take the time and energy to work at their own sexual experiences.
And you, Jose, do you think it's different for dudes? Are you guys like, we'll touch ourselves? Or is it just the perspective that women have? Because we think just up for it anytime.
I think when it comes to satisfying personal pleasure, there's all sorts of kind of dogma around it that I think is based in shame. That regardless of like whether you're rubbing one out or you're having have a masturbatory session or whatever it is, there's potentially this thing in the back of the mind that there's something wrong about it, that you shouldn't be doing it, that it's And I think that's one of the challenges, that one of the things that we're kind of also looking at in the play and stuff like that. I think there's this fear that if you allow for libidinal energy to take over, that it'll be uncontrolled. It'll just be, you know, people just screwing each other in the streets. Yeah, exactly. which is not entirely true.
Not entirely bad.
It's an exciting idea. Yeah.
But what's interesting about also the orgasm, both for men and women, and I think probably a lot more for women on a just a physical level, is there's enormous amounts of positives that come with it in terms of a hormone, like a tension release, hormone balance. It's actually probably, you know, it should be like, you know, you have a coffee in the morning, maybe you should rub one out. I'm not sure that. But it should be a regular part of one's life, and one shouldn't necessarily have to feel bad about it and shameful about it. And I think, you know, depending on what cultures, particularly religions and stuff like that, there's this overarching thing that it's, you know, it's shameful.
Exactly.
And that we're taught from very young age. I don't have kids. You guys have kids. So I don't know what, but it's that thing of like, don't touch yourself there.
Yes,
and exactly. From a very early age, and it's a difficult subject to talk to, particularly when you're talking about children. But, you know, I mean, from a very early age, we're relatively sexual.
On that point, Sharon Gordon of Lola Montez, who's very kindly has sponsored our toys, she and I were chatting. I met her a while ago, and she and I were chatting, and that her attitude towards sex is the same as eating, taking a shower, exercise.
It's a natural part of who we are.
It's a necessary. So it's a necessary part of who we are. It's as important as, she just puts it into that category. And if that can be something that's in your mind, so with regards to raising children, I have a daughter, and I read a fantastic article the other day about positive sex. So it's, you don't put a negative spin on it. You just put a positive spin on it. So her parents love each other. She's 2.5. We don't talk about, you know, that stuff now. But if she has discovered her private parts, that's absolutely fine.
Let the discovery happen.
And without going, don't touch, don't do that, sis. Yeah. Because I think that puts a negative spin. And the resulting research has shown that teenage pregnancy goes down, that early experimentation, unnecessary experimentation goes down, you know, because it's not taboo and it's not
this poo-pooed. Exciting, naughty thing. Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting because I saw the sheer look of horror on my nanny's face recently when a show I did years ago, Ed, and I told him, hey, this is when you and me and your dad were still boyfriend and girlfriend. You weren't even born yet. And he says to me, but you guys were sexing. Hey, mom. And he's 7. But I said to him, yes, Bonsu, mommy and daddy were sexing then, you know? And I feel like now already he didn't sense any embarrassment. He wasn't even shy to ask me that, you know? And I feel like if my son's going to grow up like that with seeing sex as this, it's part of life. It's that thing, when I get to it, I'll get to it. I feel like you're right. He's not going to try and sneak one in, you know? And even in terms of nudity, because I grew up knowing that if an adult is bathing, you go nowhere near where that person is bathing until you know they are fully dressed. Whereas in my house, my husband and I, it's like we're exhibitionists, eh? When we're showering, we're bathing, the kids are there. Sometimes we bath with them. And, you know, they're getting older now, but the boys and the girls know each other's parts. They know. There was a time our middle child, who's 4, was fascinated that his sister doesn't have a peepee. And he came around to me, I feel my peepee. I'm like, yeah, she doesn't have a peepee. He's like, girls don't have peepees. Well, depending. Some are born with peepees. I hope I never have to explain that, you know, because I already had to explain what a nun is to my son. And, you know, the first thing that springs to your mind is it's a lady who doesn't have sex.
Yeah, right.
That's
the
first thing that sprung to my head. But then I did find the appropriate answer, for which I thought was appropriate. I just said it's a lady who has dedicated her life to Jesus and to God, and so she stays in this place and all they do is the Lord's good work. I left it at that. Now that could easily describe a missionary, but for now it satisfied him. And I was happy anyway. So that's sexuality, bruh. Now when it comes to toys, because I'm gonna keep talking about toys, because for me, to be honest, the big thing for me with this play is I've always thought I'm very open-minded. I'm out there. But after seeing all the sex toys that are out there, I realized you can actually be conservative when it comes to sex toys. Because I have sex toys that are, it doesn't resemble a penis. That is what I want. Thank you. That's what I own. I own one that resembles a penis, and I own a little one that's there just to help the clit out every once in a while when you want to just warm yourself up, right? But now I'm discovering all these other things, but I'm coming from a straight woman's perspective where it's me and dick. You are coming from a gay woman's perspective where I think it's a whole other world. Like, the first time you started talking about this, I was like, to me, you can't show her you're shocked. Or something. Oh my God, what did I just get myself into? How? I mean,
what is lesbian sex?
No, not even what is lesbian sex. For me, it's not even what is lesbian sex. It's a whole new world out there. There are a lot of us like me, small town girl, who honestly only got exposed to homosexuality overtly here. Before Joburg, it was not. Yes, I knew that there was a whole other sexual orientation that existed. I had experimented with it in high school, but I knew it to be something that occupies a corner, a hidden corner in society. And then here you are, and it's like, it's not even out loud and proud. For me, that's a whole other thing. You, it's, oh, I just happen to sleep with women. That's.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. The other day you called me heteronormative.
Yes. But she is, guys. She's married. Come on.
With a daughter. So is the question about whether or not I feel like about the sex toys within my relationship?
Was it a natural thing? Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Like, did you just automatically go into it? Or is it like,
it
oh my God?
I think it's something you discuss with your partner. It's like, is this something we want to do? Are you keen? Gay or straight? You know. And I think it as with any other marriage, it enhances what's already there. I think you are initially attracted to the person that you marry.
Yes.
And so your sex life represents that and expresses that. And to enhance or to add to or to kink up a bit or to, what you know, that's what's, for me in my marriage, that's what sex toys are for.
Because I wasn't introduced to these things until I was getting married. I don't know about you, Jose. Do you guys do that? Because for us, I know bachelorettes, there will always be that one expert who's brought in. And for some reason, for the first time for some of us in our entire lives, we're meeting lingerie, all kinds of lingerie, edible lingerie, you know, things that just cover one bit and nothing else. You're being introduced to toys. Some women actually have never even seen a toy in a room until a bachelorette. Why? Because it feels like someone out there went, this is the only time such behavior can be accepted. Beyond this, when we are preparing the girl to be married, we will not discuss these things.
Well, it's interesting you said the bachelorette, because I often wonder whether the naughty bachelorette is developed out of the bachelors. You know, you hear such story about such kind of like crazy bachelors that bachelorettes used to be kitchen. There was a kitchen tea, was a hen party. I mean, you know what I mean? And then it's kind of like more developed into a bit more, I don't want to use the word risque is wrong. It's embracing of sexuality, which is great. And I think it's, But yeah, I think, I mean, like in my marriage, we don't really have sex toys. I think maybe, this experience of this play is something that I'm certainly kind of like starting to think about. It's kind of like the seeds being planted. Yeah. Maybe it might be good for us to introduce, some aids, and also maybe, you know, but yeah, yeah, I mean, I.
What bachelor? So bachelors is not about dude. This is how you do your woman, eh? So it's about last day of freedom. Let's get drunk.
I don't quite know the culture of bachelors. It's quite weird. I mean, I must tell you, I do find it a little bit strange. I mean, when I'm usually there, it's like you look at all the other guys, and if you really look deeply into their eyes, everybody's going, "What are we doing? I'm just like, couldn't we just have had a braai?" Because there is this thing of like, there's this pressure. It's like, there must be this stripper and there must be a few strippers. And everybody's kind of like, and you know, what's interesting is like, the strippers, you know, if she's doing a good job. No, I'll come back to that if she's doing a good job. But regardless of the kind of job she's doing and whether you at a strip club or you're not and stuff like that. And I can't speak for all guys, but certainly for my brother's bachelors and for the bachelors I've been to, there's this thing of where the girls are doing their things. Some are more extreme than others. Some just a strip, so some are kind of like using toys. Some will kind of use take somebody out of the audience supposedly and maybe kind of like do some kind of, and more than a lot of the times it's got to do with the bachelor. So they'll take him and they do a little bit of a show, and hopefully it's not, it doesn't go down the road of
night stand.
No. But you know, I know with my brother's bachelor, I mean, he was put in like a little tin bath and made to pretend. I mean, he was so drunk anyway, I don't think he remembers any of that. And he made to do all sorts of weird things, which was also about embarrassing the guy. And so I don't know. Bachelors are weird because it's about embarrassing the bachelor, which I find kind of like weird. It's like, because they end up just not having a good time, getting very drunk, not remembering it. And then when it comes to the other guys in the room, if there is a stripper, regardless of what they're doing, there's actually not a lot of like, woo, yeah, we're loving this. There's this quiet kind of like,
this should be a private moment.
Yeah, this is just weird, you know? So I find myself, which is completely generally, not necessarily out of character, but like going, woo, and applauding, and just to fill the space so that it doesn't feel so weird, you know? Because otherwise guys are like, just like, there's this thing of like going like, and then you'll get like some guys who don't realize that the better strippers are the ones that make you feel special. So they're actually looking into every single guy's eyes and they're going, you know, you're special, man.
Just wants to feel special.
Yeah, so you will have some guys who actually then go, ah, she really likes me. And it's like, no, dude, she's just really good at her job. So I was at this one bachelor's where the guy was convinced. And so, you know, they travel, the strippers, they travel with their bouncers.
Yeah.
With protection, rightly so. And for this particular reason, because this guy then, while she was busy changing, he went into the bathroom because he was convinced now that she
was into him.
And she was like, "What the hell are you doing?" He was like, "Well, obviously you like me." Oh, and she was like, "No, I don't." And I think he made some physical kind of remarks. And I think she scratched him. She had to scratch him. And then the bouncer had to clap him, I think, as well.
Oh, wow.
But I think that's my general experience of bachelors. And I can't really speak for bachelorettes, but I know I've encouraged my wife at the bachelorettes and stuff like that, to avoid that kind of weird thing if you're gonna get a guy to come in and do a show, then at least, you know, it's nothing worse. I mean, we know as performers being on stage and everybody's like, it's just deathly silent when you've just done a gag or you're meant to be. So it's like, you know, it's,
let's have a party if we're celebrating your last day of freedom.
Exactly, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's my message to all the guys. Just don't look on all weirdly and ogle, because I think a lot of guys would pretend that it's like, yeah. Because you've seen those movies where everybody's like cheering. But most of the bachelors I've been to, there's this weird, eerie silence.
So my bachelorette, talking about being heteronormative, my friends got me a stripper, but they got me a male stripper.
Oh, wow.
Because I think for me, male strippers aren't necessarily about being sexy, but are about the comedy.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So, and also, I mean, you know, I happen to have fallen in love with Terry, and so that's why I married Terry. But I think before Terry, I could have fallen in love with a man quite easily. You know, that could have happened. So I do find men attractive. So when I say that, that's not because I only am attracted to women. It's I do find men attractive. And if he's a really, really good stripper, I find him attractive, but I also find him hilarious. So, yeah, I had a male stripper at my bachelorette, which was really, really funny. And I did feel, Joes, that I was put there on the chair for the man to rub his all over bits, me, his bits all over me, to make the guests at my bachelorette laugh.
Yeah.
So not only was the stripper funny, but I became the butt of the joke as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was, not the best night of my life, can't tell a lie.
Oh, really? I can barely remember my bachelorette, but there were no sex toys involved, no stripping, no, just drunken debauchery.
Well, maybe, I think maybe, you know, each their own, but well done.
So, do you think women are letting women down? Do you think that's why, I mean, we create prudes. It's not the guys who create prudes.
Exactly.
We are so, what is it? Are we lying to each other? Are we just hiding stuff from each other? Or
are we just hardwired to be judgy bitches? I don't know. It's like, what I mean, I feel terrible about what I just said earlier about plastic and thin and
no, but it's true. No. But you're talking about extremes. I don't think you should feel bad because you're talking about people who overcompensate for what they're not doing or what they're depriving themselves of or what they think they are not allowed.
Yeah. I do feel that women let women down. I really, really do. I think that women will freaking elbow their friend between the eyes if there's a hot guy who's keen, you know.
Mm.
And not all women, but I think some. And I think also to kind of perpetuate these myths that we talk about, that we discuss in the play. I really do think that a lot of it is the I don't want to be judgy when I say this, but the, for want of a better word, the prudish position is actually only perpetuated by women. It's not enforced necessarily by men.
It's funny because while I was driving here, I was listening to the radio and they were talking about that bursary, the maiden bursary that was being offered in KwaZulu-Natal, and just finding out that the mayor who had said, who had basically, gone and endorsed this thing, even received an award from King Goodwill Zwelithini to say, you know, well done. This is how we do it, this thing.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think the virtues of virginity and the myth of how that's supported in terms of, like, you know, there's this thing around the hymen that in most cultures is actually perpetuated. What's interesting about this thing is it's not, you know, there's no particular, you don't have male virginity being celebrated.
Yes. How do you prove male virginity anyway?
Well, you don't. But you can't, but what's interesting about you can't really prove female virginity either.
Exactly.
So this is the kind of myths that go around, that the myth about the hymen. I mean, the fact is the hymen is there from birth and it never really goes away. It with age recedes. And if there's any bleeding potentially on the very first time you have sex, it's been proven that generally it might have to do with a lack of vaginal lubrication. It's got nothing to do with the split of the hymen. Mm. And I mean, you can speak to cultural things around, you know, the very women who are paid or expected to go and check virginity. I mean, from my understanding, is that there's bribery involved because families want to, you know, there's this virtue of virginity that's going around, stuff like that. So we'd rather perpetuate this myth of the hymen that supports something about women need to be reserved for men, as opposed to, well, actually, this should be a shared experience. Women and men shouldn't be, neither should be any important. And I think the extreme of it becomes genital mutilation, where it becomes normative within a particular culture.
That genital mutilation thing scares me.
Yeah. And it's normative within a particular culture. Going like, and women are the ones who are actually the mothers and the elders.
Are,
and it's not just the clitoris. It's the entire kind of vulvic external region.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jeez. Anything that has.
So you're not allowed to enjoy sex.
You're not anything that has to do with pleasure, and so that's the point. It's like women are being taken. The pleasure is being taken away. You're not allowed to have pleasure. That's the message. That's kind of.
And what does that speak of? I think that is going back to what I said earlier. That is absolutely, totally, and utterly can only be because of fear. Because of fear of what that female sexuality represents. Why remove it? What are you gaining by removing it other than removing the fear?
I actually remember watching a docu once and I cried. Oh my God, I cried like a child. There's someone who covered a documentary where they were following these little girls who were being castrated, basically, of their clitorises. And the one of the elders, because now the lady conducting the interview asks one of the elderly women, why do you do this? Why is this so damn important? Because we watched with horror as this girl had been running away from it. And we watched as they grabbed her now, they were tying her down. And you just hear this child screaming because now the cameras didn't go in there. But you hear this 10-year-old little girl screaming, who you've just watched playing outside with her friends. And she says, because if you get married and there's that thing in there, your husband is going to open your legs and say, why is there a penis? I am coming here with a penis. Why must I find a penis between your legs? What's that thing? Get rid of that thing. And she's laughing as she's saying this. And it was interesting how many girls had run away. They actually have a halfway house such situation where the girls who've run away from that mutilation are housed there and they get to go to school and they get to... But to think that it's a reality and then you bring it home to South Africa where we claim to be such a forward-moving, forward-thinking country and then we are going to check people's hymens in order to give them a bursary, because by being a virgin, you're above any other girl. You know, fuck your academic...
And that's all you're doing is perpetuating prowess. The taboo. The taboo gets perpetuated. Sex is bad. Sex is evil.
So boys who are having sex are cool. They're cool. They're smart. They can get on with life. Girls who are having sex, on the other hand.
But you know what's interesting is, speaking from a guy's point of view, so the thing about being cool, it's the same thing as being in this bachelor's party and expecting everybody... Unless they're at the point where they've kind of like really potentially maybe we're really drunk and you know all our guards are down and stuff like that. But generally, what's robbed from us as men is exactly the stereotype. It's that you're cool, you should be, in control. Mm. It's celebrated, and that there's no emotional connection to whatsoever. That's the flip side of it for the male is that we're not given. We're not allowed to feel sensitive about it, emotional about it. You know, it becomes about being in control. It becomes about, something fashionable, about peer pressure. And all those things then starts also perpetuating something, which it becomes about, you know, power, control, and it doesn't become about the personal, about the intimate, about one-on-one.
You just want to keep going for 30 minutes nonstop. You don't care that I'm going to dry up and it's going to hurt. You just want to prove how long you can stay hard.
Yeah, well, not necessarily, but I think culturally speaking, I think that's what gets perpetuated. I mean, the very first time that I had sex, and I came to it very late because I'm admittedly know about the power of the vagina, and it overwhelmed me, and so much so that my very first experience, I couldn't get it up. We really tried everything, you know, and I couldn't get it up because of performance pressure, and supposedly dealing with all these things around, I suppose. Knowing that understanding that female sexuality is something that is very powerful.
Are guys honest with each other about that?
No, and that's what I'm saying.
You're being pretty honest with us.
I know. I'm blown away right now.
No, guys aren't honest about that, and that's the point.
Yeah.
You know, and if anything, when it comes to relationships and being in marriages and stuff like that, we've been talking about women and how sometimes their sex drives might have problems, but what if it's the male? And that's something also we're dealing in the play.
But that's even more taboo. It's crazy. It's like because male kind of machismo strength is so linked to their virility, you know, and so that's, I mean, for women to be libidinal and out there, and for men to not be. It's like this push-pull. It's very, very, very interesting. And so somewhere, actually, we actually all want the same thing.
We want to have good sex.
We want to have good sex, but there's this got to be like this for the guy and got to be like this for the girl.
But it doesn't make sense, because then if I'm not wild in bed, then I'm frigid.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
And then if I'm wild in bed, I'm a whore.
You're a slut.
Like, yeah. What do you want? What do you? Do you want me to eat you or not? Are you hungry or not? Mm. Hey? So at the end of the day, that's what tease is about. It's about, because also it is also, don't you think sex is also tied to people's sense of worth as well? Because I know for me, if you can't get it up, I'm going to feel like there's something wrong with me. You can insist as much as you want that it's you have a problem, you have a health issue, but I'm going to go, why can't I make you hard? Mm. And if you take forever to come, I'm going to want to know, are you not enjoying it? Am I too wide? Is that why you're not, is that why you're struggling to come? You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting. Yeah. Yet the poor guy is thinking, no, I need to keep going, so she doesn't think I'm a weakling who's going to come in 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing. And particularly, I think the very first times that we come to, that we experience sex, there's all this stuff, as with anything, but there's all this stuff that's filled your head that is probably less true than when you think, that robs you of the actual real experience, because you feel you're playing a role. So you're putting on these masks as a guy, as a woman, and stuff like that. And I think and generally speaking, going back to a large part of the play is around those roles. You know, one of the characters, Ava's character that Vanessa is playing, that we know is you know, she's playing this role that she's never really experienced and enjoyed sex. She's never been part of her makeup. And when she does it out of some kind of, what would you call it? Duty.
An
obligation,
yeah.
Because that's what you do when you're married.
Yeah.
But, you know, when she discovers that actually maybe you can, it's something that's pleasurable and it's something that it's yours and that you can own it. It's interesting. You know, particularly, I mean, in Western culture, but in many cultures, that the vocabulary of women is that women don't own their own bodies. You know, it's kind of designed. It's when, I suppose, maybe what Vanessa was saying about a lot of people who, you know, you kind of work at the, you know, you go to the gym and you do everything supposedly that magazines, it's the magazine.
Yeah,
what is the perfect image? Regardless of what that supposedly is, and you know, that need not be the only and thing, and that's not the only. There is no perfect image of a woman, of a man, and of sex and how to have it.
But I've seen your muscles; they are very close to perfect.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. I'd have to agree with you.
I did not see them coming, those things. Hey, they hit me off.
It feels like this is the human condition. And I mean, you know, I'm absolutely no expert. I have found the research on this absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. I am interested in female sexuality. I'm no Dr. Eve. But it does feel like this is the human condition. And it's about this kind of delicate, intricate dance that we're constantly doing within and without marriages and, you know, all relationships. Yeah.
Yeah. Sex. Must just enjoy it. Eh? I think it's like laughter. Don't hold back. Just though you'll have an internal combustion. You must rather let it out and enjoy.
Oh, it's creative expression.
Yes.
It's creative expression.
So what I do on this show is I always have a hug a man section. So we have to decide on what qualifies men for a hug today. Which men should we hug, Jose?
Sure.
Which men do you feel today deserve the collective hug of sipping tea?
Collective hug. I don't know. What comes to mind is the Springbok rugby team.
Okay. Why are we hugging them?
Because against all odds, and in a very short space of time, they dug deep on Saturday, and they pulled themselves towards themselves, as my mom would say. And somehow they overcame an island team that was a very unlikely win, and if anything, what's the amazing thing is it's like those sports movies. It's that thing about the personal overcoming some personal challenge.
Yeah.
Is that somehow they didn't believe
that they
and then
could.
Something happened, and then suddenly something sparked.
Yeah.
And it all came together in some kind of magical thing that they what it was about was they themselves overcame their own doubts. Wow. And that's what was amazing. So I think they deserve a bit of that.
So Huggerman today goes out to the box. I would also actually like to hug every man who had their bok moment in the bed recently, who went in the bedroom and in their bok moment overcame, became that guy for that girl. On that note, I'm Timmy Marake. I would like to thank my guests, Mr. Jose Domingos.
Thank you, Timmy.
Ms. is Vanessa Frost Cooperman. Cooperman Frost. She's Cooperman, you're Frost. So you double barrel.
Yeah, so actually professionally, she's Terry Ehler and I'm Vanessa Frost. But married, just in life, we are Terry and Vanessa Cooperman Frost.
And this is I, Timmy Meraki, officially Timmy Osai Tutu, saying love each other. Bye-bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.